Abate la rimette dentro, esce Radu, porta vuota. Gol! Gol! Abbiamo battuto il gatto nero! Li abbiamo battuti tutti, Alessio! Grande Alessio! È bella la vita! Lava quella zolla, Alessio! Lava la quella zolla, Alessio!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. And I'm joined once again by Anthony Torgrud.
What's up, guys? Glad to be here. Sorry, I was just yawning. He caught me at the worst time there. But I'm here. I'm happy. I'm awake. And you can follow me on Twitter at Torgrud45. And we also got Madison with us.
Yeah, kind of excited to head into the transfer window here. A little bit nervous. But we're going to be talking through it all summer. So you guys can go ahead and follow me on Twitter at Madison_DT.
Yeah, there's a real end of season feeling about this one. Obviously, we don't have a game to recap. We don't have a game to preview. Feels a bit like sort of those international break ones that we do, where really we're just talking about events off the field. But that doesn't mean that there hasn't been a lot of stuff happening off the pitch for us. In the last episode, last week, just towards the end, sort of the last 15 minutes, the reports started coming out that Gennaro Gattuso was ready to step down the next day as head coach, and that Leonardo would be leaving as well. Both of those things ended up happening. We are now currently without a head coach and without a sporting director. Just focusing on Gattuso first. AJ, 1 week on, how are you feeling about the whole thing?
I'm sad, but it is the right decision. I'm impressed with the character that Gattuso showed when he stepped down, you know, waiving the pay for the remaining 2 years of his contract that he was entitled to. I think they reported it was like 11 million euros he left on the table, and his only request was that his staff was still paid. So that's really cool. You know, it frees up a lot of wage, but that's something that people don't really consider is, you know, for a while there we were paying what was like four coaches still when we had Montella. We had like so many sacked managers that we still had to pay off, and that was hurting our market and all that as well. And Gattuso definitely did us a solid with that. So I really appreciate the way he went out. You know, a lot of character always has been on and off the pitch and continues to show that. And he said that his story with Milan is never going to be about money. So that was really cool. I don't like the names that are gaining steam as far as replacement, so I'm a little worried about that. But, you know, that'll be a discussion we'll have later.
Yeah, definitely. Maddie, one of the interesting things that sort of come out of it, Gattuso did an interview later in the week, sort of explaining his decision to leave. But one of the things that he said is that Milan fans shouldn't worry and that the club is in good hands. Did you find that surprising, given that all the reports have been that he's had disagreements with Gazidis and those in charge?
Yeah, I don't know if he's one to bullshit the fans only because he's been so blunt with us for the past 18 months. So I'm pretty confident, and I think he's telling us the truth, but it is weird that he would say that, but then he stepped down because he was at odds with Gazidis. But it's also because he was disappointed that he didn't get the team Champions League, and he probably didn't feel that he should be the manager to take the team forward. So, I mean, there's always, you know, the media spin on it and what the PR department has to say, you know, and all that stuff. We're probably never going to get the real story behind it. But
just to kind of jump in here on you, Maddie, one of the things he mentioned in that interview, which I thought was interesting, was he said that even if he had gotten fourth place, that he would have stepped down. He said it was a decision he had made a while ago, which I thought was odd because up until like the maybe penultimate game day of the season, he said that his goal was to continue with Milan as long as he can, which I thought was interesting, but continue. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, he certainly said towards the last month of his tenure, he said a lot of contradictory stuff. Yeah. Sort of went from, you know, with four games to go, saying that he would evaluate his position at the end of the season, nothing was set in stone. And then, like you say, penultimate game comes out and says that he wants to continue with the club for as long as possible. What that makes me wonder, because I think, like you say, he's a man who's always come out and said it how it is. He's blunt, he's honest. I wonder if during that last month, there really were ups and downs in the relationship between Gattuso, Leonardo and Gazidis. You know, that last month of the season, it was flipping flopping whether we were going to be in the top four or not. You know, then the plans change and the visions for the summer, you know, the signings that we're going to make, etc., that starts changing. And perhaps, you know, the nature of that dynamic and not knowing where we're going to be next season, it sort of wore him down. And eventually when we missed out, he was like, right, well, I had actually made the decision that I was going to step down anyway because the club seemingly couldn't be set on one vision going forward for the summer. We won't know. I don't think we'll know until some time has passed. Or we might never know because Gattuso is obviously the kind of guy who will maintain all of his dignity, and he won't come out and slander the club that he loves. And I have a lot of respect for him for that. As you mentioned, AJ, a lot of respect for him waiving the remaining salary that he was owed. It does save us a lot of money, and it says a lot about the kind of person that he is and how much he adores the club. And yeah, it's still sad a week on from my point of view, and from a lot of fans' point of view. I think there was a general sort of quietness that came over. It was almost as if it was a period of mourning after he'd actually left, you know, as if nobody really knew what to do then, because you don't really, they say that you don't realise how good you had something until it's gone. And the links have turned, as you mentioned, from Conte, Sarri, even Allegri a little bit here and there, to now managers who are not as high profile. And I think people are starting to regret being so aggressive with the whole Gattuso out, campaign, I guess. And yeah, it's just sad to see the back of another legend. And you've kind of got to wonder when this circle stops of bringing back club legends and think, right, this is the guy who's going to sort it this time around. And then 12 months down the line, you see in the back of them as they walk out the door again. I don't know. Are you worried about, because Gazidis has come out and also done an interview, which was perhaps a bit more reassuring than I was expecting. But AJ, are you worried about the way that Gazidis is running this club?
I am. That interview was very PR styled. It definitely was everything you want to hear. So to me, I'm a big believer in if it's too good to be true, it probably is. And when he just tells you exactly what you want to hear for an entire interview after everyone's pissed that Leo and Gattuso just stepped down, I don't know. I'm a little weary of that. And the conflicting reports of, well, there was disagreements with Leo and his targets, but we're still going to move forward with his targets even though he's no longer here, that doesn't make any sense to me. The things Arsenal fans and players and people in the Arsenal structure of the club have said about the way Gazidis runs it kind of worries me. And the fact that we are owned by a hedge fund that wants to foot for a profit, that's no secret. It sounds like he's going to do his best on the technical side of it, you know, but maybe not so much on the sporting side. It sounds like he wants to interfere in that more than he should. I don't know. I'm pretty nervous, and I was against it from the beginning simply because he was from Arsenal. So I'm worried that that's. I just don't want us to become Arsenal. You know, I feel like Elliot would be complacent if we were just consistently second, third, or fourth. You know, but never quite making that extra push.
Yeah, I gotta agree with you there. I mean, and it only makes sense that they brought him in only because of what he did at Arsenal. And that's exactly what they want to happen with AC Milan, and then they want to sell him. So they see this as a money opportunity. They don't really see this as – they see it as restoring the club, but for us it's restoring us back to where we were. To them it's restoring us so they can make a quick dollar.
Mm. Yeah, I did a sort of you might call it a rant on why Gattuso leaving was actually a pretty damning indictment of where we are as a club. And in that sort of mentioned, there has to be a point where you start to look at things with a magnifying glass and realise that, you know, Elliot management are not fans of this club. They're not used to owning football teams. It's as simple as that. Their interests are purely economic. Of course, there is the economic interests are intrinsically linked with, you know, the performance in the sporting side, because obviously you get more revenue if the team's doing better, if you get into the Champions League, all that kind of stuff.
Exactly.
But there needs to be a point where you look at things not from a Milan fan's point of view and realise exactly what's being done at the moment. And that is this idea of transforming us commercially off the pitch to bring us into the 21st century, which is kind of a phrase that's probably a bit too generic. But they clearly saw Gazidis as the man to do that. Don't get me wrong, I think what he did do at Arsenal from a commercial point of view is good. He transformed them into one of the sort of commercial superpowers in modern football. And we did need a little bit of modernising, I think, off the pitch. But we don't really know what he's doing in that sense, other than like apparently negotiating clothing deals and stuff like that. We've dropped Diesel and gone with somebody else, for example. And this is where it comes back to the criticisms that were levelled at him from Arsenal fans, were that he didn't stick to his role enough. He, instead of sticking on the commercial side as a sports business executive or a chief executive in our case, he was too intrusive on the sporting side. You know, he wanted too much say in the recruitment policy and that kind of thing. That's a sporting director's job. You know, if it's true and Gazidis was telling Leonardo, you need to buy young players on the cheap that have got big potential, I'm not surprised Leonardo walked, because it's surely the president's job to tell Leonardo how much money is available. Then Leonardo goes out and decides the best way to spend that, with approval from those around him, obviously scouts and whoever else is involved in that discussion. But Gazidis shouldn't really be involved in that side of things, in my opinion. His role is a bit more like, I don't know, when we had Umberto Gandini before he left for Roma, I think it was, purely negotiating business deals. I could be wrong on that. Perhaps I'm misunderstanding the role of a chief executive, but I don't think that there should be much crossover between a chief exec and a sporting director. It kind of reminds me of how Man United are perceived from the outside, when you've got Ed Woodward there, who gets criticised so regularly because he's not actually from a sporting background. Gazidis, for example, has a degree in law, and that's it. You know, he had some experience with Major League Soccer, I believe, but he was in the business and marketing arm of that. And then you look, you know, Ed Woodward and the Glazers, who are American owners. The criticism is that they don't know enough about football, and that the club's been running in an inefficient way as a result. So yeah, my concerns are still there over Gazidis, regardless of the interviews that he's doing. And we'll just have to see how it goes, I guess. But my point in that article, and the point that I'll reiterate now, is that if you're going to have some kind of vision where you want to sign young players that have, you know, that are considered to have high upside, big potential, that kind of stuff, then go with it. Fully invest in that. You know, you can't then be talking about bringing in, you know, 30-odd-year-old midfielders from France and stuff. And you know what I mean? Of course, there needs to be a balance to the squad. But if your idea is to build a young core, then go with that and back a manager who's going to improve those players. Fully invest in that style. Otherwise, it's not going to work, and you'll look back on it and think, well, we half-assed it. And that brings us on to a pretty important point, one which AJ alluded to earlier about the names that have been linked for replacing Gattuso. The one at the moment, I think Sky have actually just reported it just before we started recording here, it seems to be Marco Giampaolo from Sampdoria. AJ, do you know much about him? What are your first impressions on the idea that he's going to be our next boss?
I'm not thrilled. I do like a 4-3-1-2. That is one of my favorite formations, so that's cool if he does go that route, and I think it makes a lot of sense just overall, given that we don't have a left wing, so we would have to buy one if we wanted to continue with 4-3-3, But if we were to switch to 4-3-1-2, then we could just sell our right wing and help us with financial fair play, and then that solves a problem, two problems. So it does make sense to make that switch. But as far as Giampaolo himself, I'm not the biggest fan. I know he's never finished above ninth, never really had a big club. But obviously Sarri came from Empoli, you know, where did Allegri come from? Genoa or something like that. He came from a small club too. And like, you know, everyone's got to start somewhere. So maybe this is the guy, and this is his big break. It's from what I see on Twitter, a lot of semi-credible names, seem to think he's pretty technical and good. But like I said, I'm not a fan. I don't know a whole lot about him. But just overall, I don't like the move given the names that are available.
Yeah, Maddie, I'll throw it to you. How do you feel about it? Obviously, he's not the caliber of name that we were being linked with before. Obviously, Conte's ended up in Milan, but with the wrong team. Sarri's looking like going to Juve. How do you feel about Giampaolo?
I kind of feel the same way as AJ, where, you know, he has never really had a big club and finished higher than ninth. He's been in a lot of clubs for one or two seasons before moving on. You know, he's been in some relegation battles and some promotion battles. But also, like AJ said, is you have to start somewhere. So if you look at Massimiliano Allegri, he was at Calgary, Sassuolo, Spal, and two teams I'm not even going to try and say before he jumped to Milan and then Juve. And now he's rumored to be going to Chelsea or Barcelona, you know, or like these huge clubs. And so this could be Giampaolo's, did I say his name right? His big break?
Yeah.
I'm going to have to start practicing that if he's our coach for next season. It sounds like he's going to be, but let's give it a shot, man. Got nothing to lose. I mean, I guess we have Champions League to lose, but we're not in it, so, you know,
yeah,
if we
get
it, then it'd be sweet, but if not, then we screwed up and we go in a different direction again.
I think that's an important point there that you touch on, though, is that, you know, we're not in the Champions League next season. I think Milan Twitter, it's not, well, Milan fans on social media in general, and not exactly renowned for their rational thinking. And a huge amount of the expectation seems to be that we would go out and get this world-class coach. You know, myself included, when Allegri left Juve, I joined the crowd of people who were saying, go after him. We should absolutely make an offer for him. That wasn't me saying that I thought he'd accept it, though. We're not as attractive a proposition as we would have been 10 years ago. For that reason, we can't pick and choose our manager. It's as simple as that. We can't go to Spurs, or we can't go to Pochettino and say, "Oh, we're gonna take him now." It just doesn't work that way.
I'd say the Milan job's probably the hardest coaching job available right now, to be honest. Given the name and where we're at in the situation,
so much uncertainty. Yeah,
exactly.
I think it is to an extent because we have an incredibly demanding fan base with very little patience. There are a few fan bases like that in football, Chelsea being one of them. So I think the Chelsea job is if that becomes a vacancy, will probably usurp us as being the most difficult because A, they're looking like having a transfer ban, and B, managers haven't seemed to last more than 2 years since the turn of the millennium. But yeah, it's a very difficult job. It's not as appealing as it was because of the budgetary restraints and stuff that are rumoured. Obviously, no Champions League football to offer. A squad that, as we've discussed at length on here before, is massively unbalanced and, in my opinion, still needs quite a lot of work. It means that we can't go and you know, hijack a move for Sarri that's the reason that Conte's ended up at Inter is because they managed to finish in the top four and there's something there to build on. There's that extra 60 million euros worth of revenue to work with. It makes a big difference. We're back to sort of hoping that we get our next Allegri here where we poach a manager from a mid-table team that's shown promise, has a clear identity, and most importantly, is willing to join. And that's where we seemingly are at the moment. Well, so he's 51 years old, so he's had a bit of time to prove himself now. He's managed a number of clubs in Serie A, notably it's Empoli and Sampdoria. He spent a season with Empoli and was very impressive with them. Did very good job on a low budget, and then has spent the last three seasons at Sampdoria, where he's just sort of been chugging along, really. He's succeeded Vincenzo Montella, which is quite ironic in itself. But the one thing that I will say about him is that I'm apprehensive as well. There's no way that hiring him is guaranteed success. There's no way that there's a 100% chance that we're back in the top four come the end of next season by hiring someone like Gianpaolo. But one thing I do respect about him, as AJ has mentioned, is that he does have a fixed way of playing football. The 4-3-1-2 is arguably the last formation that brought us consistent success, because we won the Scudetto with it under Allegri in 2010-11. And the way that he deploys it is actually really interesting. So another thing that I did a pretty in-depth article on the site about was just exactly how he uses a 4-3-1-2. It's like a really narrow back four. The fullbacks tend to stay back until the right moment to go forward. A lot of the passing is done from the centre-backs into the midfield, so need two ball-playing centre-backs. All of sort of the front players are, you know, from the central midfield forwards are involved in the press in some way. It's quite an interesting and kind of revolutionary setup that he's deployed. And I would recommend to anybody, you don't have to read my article, but if you do, then go for it. Hope you enjoy it. But there's a lot of good videos online, particularly one on their win over Napoli, which analyse sort of the way that he plays. And once you see what he's done there with what is quite a young squad, but it's not a brilliant squad, let's be honest. You think he's going to have greater resources at his disposal here. So why not give it a go? Why not give it a go? Like I said, it's by no means guaranteed success. But we're in a position where if we're going to take a chance on anyone, I think he's probably the right person to take a chance on. For example, Roma are taking a chance on Fonseca from Shakhtar, and I think that's a far bigger risk than us going with Gianpaolo.
I agree. He doesn't know the league. But I mean,
neither do their players. Like,
you know, but like what you were saying earlier, is that he doesn't guarantee you Champions League. No coach is going to guarantee us Champions League.
Spalletti arguably would.
Yeah, I was going to say Spalletti. I would argue. I mean, you could argue some coaches would guarantee you, like Pep, Mourinho, maybe, you know, Conte, but I get your point.
Not available to us.
Managers are going to have down years, you know, and coming to a club like Milan where, you know, Pep has always had everything handed to him, you know, at Barcelona, Munich, City, he's going to have to, like, create a team at Milan, and it's going to take him a few years to create this team. You know, I bet we finish top three, maybe, but it's not guaranteed. Nothing's guaranteed in sports.
Except for Juventus management.
Well, of course.
I think, again, it comes down to sort of where we are as a club. If we somehow were to manage to tempt a world-class manager, say if we were to go to Pochettino and actually say, look, here's 200, 250 million, whatever, overhaul the squad, that probably still wouldn't be enough, because world-class managers are very meticulous and they want the squad to be of a level that they feel they are. You know, Pep, he needs backing, but that is to bring in the kind of players that he can build a legacy with, basically, which is what he's doing at Man City at the moment. You know, the core that he's got there is incredible. It's what he did at Barcelona. They're still kind of dining off that now. They need the backing. It's as simple as that. So if we're not in a position to give the backing, then we should probably be going for a manager who can do the best with the pieces that are available.
Exactly.
And And for that reason, I don't... I mean, Sarri is obviously the one at the moment. It's funny because as we started recording, a load of stuff's come out that Sarri to Juve is absolutely not nailed on anymore. So it'd be
really,
quite
I
interesting
didn't see
to
that.
See. Yeah, it'd be quite... Apparently they want Pochettino. It's all rumours, obviously, at this stage. But if it does come out more concrete that that Juve don't want Sarri, then I'd certainly be ringing him because... I don't think he's going to be leaving for another country. I think he'll only leave for Serie A. Yeah. And I believe we are slightly more attractive than Roma at this stage because nobody wants to work under Palotta the way that he's running that club. Just back to Gianpaolo. I think that with him comes the opportunity to perhaps bring a couple of decent players who might be sold by his style of play. I mean, Joachim Anderson has been mentioned as one. Very, very good young centre-back. Currently at Sampdoria, obviously, so he would be following his manager to his new club. But good ball-playing defender like Romagnoli is, but that's the way that he likes his defenders to be because, like I said, they play from the centre-backs into the midfield and that's when the full-backs tend to join the attack. So, seen Dennis Priet mentioned as well. But I've also seen a lot of people say that's exactly why we shouldn't be going for someone like Gianpaolo, because if that's all he can really bring us, then we're not going to improve the squad much at all. It's an interesting one. I don't know. I mean, there's nobody else really, is there? Let's be honest. Unless we are to go in for Spalletti at this stage, it's pretty much going to be him.
I would take Spalletti, and I know people don't like that simply because he was at Inter and Roma, but I think that's the only guy that could guarantee us top four, mm-hmm. or pretty close to, you know? His track record's proven, whereas Gianpaolo's is not. I don't like the way Spalletti teams play. It seems like they just get lucky, which, I mean, I wouldn't mind getting some luck. We've had quite a few years of bad luck, but... one thing that did just come out, though, but from DiMarzio, is he's saying that Maldini has accepted the role of technical director, not sporting director. But Maldini's going to choose a sporting director, most likely a former player. And then it says Gianpaolo is already chosen as the next coach. So sounds like that's a done deal. They're waiting until all the holes in management are filled to make an announcement. They're going to announce it all at once, I guess.
Oh, like one of the famous Fassone Mirabelli press conferences.
Exactly.
Triple handshake. That's going to be sick.
That's what it sounds like we're getting.
Yeah.
And rumors of Rui Costa taking the sporting director role, which he's apparently been great at Benfica doing it. Mm. Plus, he's an animal and he's got one of the greatest quotes ever. So that'd be cool.
Yeah, it's interesting that because obviously it would make sense. He's still our record signing. Is Rui Costa, which a lot of people don't know, when we signed him in 2001 from Fiorentina. But the way that he's been running Benfica seems very good. Like, they've got a lot of talented young players in their squad at the moment. João Félix is the one who's getting a lot of hype. Can you imagine if he brought João Félix with him to us? We
that
arguably don't need him because we've got Paqueta, but, you know. Just looking down, Ruben Dias, really talented defender. They've got... Grimaldo, who's a pretty good fullback, I would take him. Ferro's meant to be quite a good sort of defensive prospect. Oh my god, they have a Delta Rat. Bring him back.
Just to go back, I'm pretty sure Bonucci actually topped Rui Costa for most expensive transfer.
No. Hang on, let me double check that.
I thought Rui Costa
was just
38
under.
Bonucci was 40.
I think it was just under. Oh, wow, it says here both were 40. So it tied it. This is according to Transfermarkt, so...
We need to sign some bigwig then. How much was Caldara? He was up there, wasn't he? And Piontek was 35.
So. Yeah. Piontek, yeah, 35. It's pretty interesting, actually. There's some pretty good articles on our most expensive players ever. This here says, Mr. Fire. Yeah, I don't want to dwell on that too much. I put something out earlier basically saying, oh, I've seen a lot of people criticising the idea of hiring Gianpaolo because he's too negative a coach, and that is one of the criticisms of the 4-3-1-2 that he plays, is that the back four is sat quite high but very, very narrow, and the midfield three sits quite deep. And, you know, sometimes you spend long periods of the game without the ball or whatever, but basically, just to put it into perspective, Sampdoria scored more goals last season in the league than Inter, us, Torino and Lazio, so that's like, you know, the majority of teams that were above them. Obviously, Juve, Napoli and Atalanta are kind of their own league at this point.
Atalanta had the most goals in the league by a long shot.
Yeah, man. Yeah, they were great to watch this season. Also, Sampdoria last season scored 4 or more goals 5 times in the league last season. We did it once.
That's wild.
And that was at Chievo, so it doesn't really count.
Can you believe Empoli scored 51 goals? They only had 4 goals less than us.
Yeah,
the problem is they conceded 70, and that's why they're relegated. But
we really didn't score many goals last season.
It was just our defense that was solid. I mean, pretty good. We're definitely in the top chunk, but 55 is... Yeah, not high.
We definitely
need more of a goal-scoring threat.
And I think we had that with Piontek, and if we switch to a 4-3-1-2, we're going to have the dual striker, probably have Andre Silva back. I think when he was most dangerous was when we were running a two-striker formation in Europa League with Cutrone, and I think him and Piontek would be fantastic. I would love to see that. Plus, I don't have to get rid of my Andre Silva jersey that I bought 2 years ago already.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. There is quite a lot of speculation that, now he's back at Milan because Sevilla aren't going to redeem him, that he could be hanging around for a while, and that Gianpaolo coming. I wouldn't hate it. I mean, there was something in the media earlier about potentially swapping him with Patrick Schick.
I hate that idea. Hate it.
I don't mind that.
Schick was the biggest flop of the season that year.
He was really good at Samp, though. Really good at Samp under Gianpaolo because he was playing two up front and Roma play 4-3-3. So he had nowhere to play naturally. My only problem with playing Piontek and Andre Silva up front is that it wouldn't work, quite simply, because they're both poachers who aren't good enough on the ball.
Andre Silva's great on the ball.
I disagree. I think selective memory on that. I think he really struggled. It took him so long to get that first Serie A goal, remember?
But he also
great in the Europa
much.
League against part-time teams and school teachers and plumbers and stuff. But I much prefer seeing Piontek and Cutrone up front because of the way that the press works as well. But there's going to be room potentially for sort of 4 strikers in this squad because if you have an injury, you can't have none on the bench, you know what I mean? So... Duvan Zapata is still available as well, and he worked with...
He's going to Napoli, isn't he? Didn't that happen today?
Well, talked about it before the podcast. But something's just come up from DiMarzio as well, saying that Napoli are going after Valencia's Rodrigo, and he's like the first choice as a striker. So, who knows, they might not actually go for Zapata. I'd really, really go for him, man. I know I've pushed this seemingly every week on the podcast, but I think he's an ideal centre forward. And we could get a few good years out of him, to be honest, but probably won't happen. We've had a few questions about this actually from listeners. Where would a 4-3-1-2 leave Sousa?
Sold.
Yeah.
Sold, yeah.
But I also saw that it might be a 4-2-3-1, which he could fit in. I just don't like the double pivot.
No, I don't like the double pivot. You need to have two very specific midfielders to occupy that role, and we don't have the duo at the moment to do it. It's interesting because, in theory, if we play a 4-3-1-2, it kind of negates Suso because he's played as a trequartista before. Briefly, I think, and it just didn't work at all.
Right.
He's just so much better cutting in from a wing. And obviously we rely so much on his delivery. But we arguably need a sort of deep-lying playmaker as well. Because Bakayoko's gone back. And we don't know if we're going to end up signing him Kessier can't do it. Belia's probably going. Bonaventura won't do it. So that's something else. That's going to be another kind of crucial need for the summer. Because you can't just stick anyone there, obviously, at Samp. Before he went to Arsenal, Gianpaolo had Lucas Torreira playing that role, sort of the deepest of the midfield three. And he was the one who dropped and received the ball, but was also very good on the defensive end. Kind of like what we thought we were signing with Belia.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's amazing. And there's nobody in our squad that can really do that role at the moment, in my opinion. So that's another place that we need to strengthen in. I agree with you though. I think 4-3-1-2 would sort of spell the end for Sousa. And that's not because of his performance in the second half of the season. I think it's a combination of factors. I think he's going to demand a pay rise. There's already talks about Maldini sitting down with Sousa as his first job to sort of clarify his future. I think he'll demand a pay rise, which we'll be very reluctant to offer, in exchange for sort of removing any release clause that he has, which is currently 38 million euros. I don't see Sousa's agent or his representatives being willing to sort of waive that release clause, because if a move to the Champions League becomes available, he'll want to go. I think he's probably a goner if we had Gianpaolo. But who knows? He might try and kind of reinvent the way he plays. He might even stick him in a midfield three.
If it's Sousa as a second striker? That's that on the ball creativity, him and Piątek up top. It'd be interesting, but it might work, honestly.
Yeah, I think it's not completely out of the question. Obviously, we have like Castillejo, who has played as a striker before. Sousa hasn't, really. But if you sort of want in a more deep-lying creative forward alongside a poacher, then absolutely, it could possibly work. I think he's more likely to try and crowbar him into that number 10 role, but that's got Paqueta's name written all over it.
And that's where Paqueta should be.
Yeah.
He killed it with the national team there.
That is kind of thing where you think, okay, if we are going to go with a 4-3-1-2, one of the absolutely amazing benefits of it in a way is that, you know, obviously we've got Donnarumma still. You've got Romagnoli, who will have a centre-back partner who's also comfortable on the ball, so that'll be great. Obviously, Calabria will be playing as a right-back, and he will have defensive responsibility as well as, you know, he'll be asked to contribute going forward as well. And then there's going to be opportunities for Paqueta and Kessier, possibly. We'll see what happens with him, but I think he could probably occupy one of the like flanking midfield roles. And then, Paqueta in behind the strikers. So that young core will, in theory, all be in roles that are ideal for them, which is good.
Yeah, it'll almost be like a midfield diamond, honestly.
Yeah, it will. I think it is very much like a midfield diamond. I think it's much easier to think about it that way as well.
Yeah.
Because
of a 4-1-2-1-2.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the thing is, the base of the... Because obviously I've watched all these videos and stuff, which says a lot about my life, actually, to be doing that on a Sunday night. But watching a lot of videos on the press tends to leave one of the... Obviously, the anchor stays back in the press, but so does one of the other midfielders. So, it's an interesting structure, basically, and I think he will have his own ideas about the players that he wants to bring in and help to implement that. We'll see if the budget's available to go out and do that, but I will be a bit pissed off if it's like our starting CDM next season is Stefano Sensi. But you just don't know, do you, at this point? So that's Sousa. Right, so @IamCKE asks about the rumoured transfer targets. So we'll start with Sandro Tonali. We haven't really spoken too much about him, to be honest. This is the guy who's like a self-proclaimed Milan fan. He models himself on Gattuso. He's basically been begging for a move to us.
Yeah, never stops talking about.
Yeah, it is funny. And if Gazidis has this idea of sort of a youth revolution at the club, buying players with huge potential, Tonali's got to be the guy, hasn't he?
Honestly, I don't know. I don't watch Serie B. I can't care less. So,
he's going to be out about next season.
Is he? I think he'd go up. That's cool.
Promoted.
I think it depends on how much he costs, and maybe we, buy him and loan him back out. I don't think he's going to be playing next season for us. I think that, although we're getting rid of quite a few midfielders, I don't know. I'm with AJ. I don't watch that league, but he's got a lot of hype around him, but so did Hakim Mastore, or whatever his name was. And
oh, God, what happened to him?
Where he is now.
I'm now Googling where Hakim Mastore is playing.
He's some YouTube star.
Nowhere. Yeah, he's released.
He is a free agent. Dude, he had like a Red Bull commercial where he was dribbling alongside Neymar. He was so hyped.
Yeah,
for
man.
No reason. He never played.
Yeah.
I'm fairly sure if you type into eBay, we're not sponsored by eBay, by the way. But if eBay want to sponsor us, then go for it, man. Unban me first, though. That'd be quite good. If you type into eBay now, Mastore, AC Milan shirt, AC Milan jersey, whatever, there will be some available because there were that many made. He was going to be the next big.
I was so lucky that I went to the store to get one, and they said they didn't have his name available. So I was like, I guess I'll get an El Shaarawy. Oh, thank God! Well. Like, yeah, it did. That I mean, El Shaarawy's still gone, but
he's. I'd love to see him back, but there'd be no role for him under Gianpaolo either.
Yeah, he's going to Juve. I heard, unfortunately.
I don't like that.
Yeah, I heard he was linked to Juve.
There are several.
Oh my God, I'd be so pissed.
Yeah, I don't want that.
I love
at all.
That'd
be awful.
I would be really not like him anymore.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Yeah, I mean Roma, I don't have a huge problem with. I don't particularly like them, but I don't feel hatred towards them. But yeah, Juve. If he goes to Juve, he's finished for me. I might burn his shirt. Anyway, just quickly back on Tonali. I would recommend to anybody who hasn't seen him at length this season, which I'm guessing most haven't because, like AJ mentioned, they were in Serie B. There's a video on Scout Nation on YouTube called Why Every Team Wants Sandro Tonali. And it's basically 11 minutes of like his best highlights of the season or whatever. And you can see the kind of player that he will hopefully become. He looks very, very good on the ball.
My thing is, though, is he just a Serie A level guy playing in Serie B, or is he actually top level? You know,
he's 19, so I guess we won't know for two.
Hey, man, if you make a highlight tape of me, I could look like Neymar.
That's what I'm saying.
No, you couldn't. You still look like a god in
my life. I'll tell you what. The other day, it was like a week ago, actually, we went and played at the park. We just kicked the ball around. And I wasn't intentionally doing it, but I turned it into the crossbar challenge because I hit it like four times in a row on my first like four shots. It never happens. So I was like, oh, this was all planned. If you put that, you know, I look sick on highlights, but I'm not.
Yeah, well, there's no crossbar challenge on this. It's actual games of competitive football. But, yeah, he actually is funny because I agree with what Maddie said. I don't think he'd be ready to start games for us next season. If we do even sign him, he might cost too much or he might stay at Brescia or whatever. But his role is basically the one that I was saying we needed, a deep-lying playmaker. Strong, energetic, creative. We'll see. But he seems to be crying out for a move to us. So that's one of them ticked off. This is an interesting one. Abdelkadir Omur, we were linked with him randomly out of the blue yesterday. Some guy who plays for Trabzonspor in Turkey. He's actually another kid who's very hyped. He's 19 as well. He's been linked quite a bit with Liverpool and I believe Spurs. I don't know anything about him, I'm afraid, really.
Same, nothing.
Yeah, I've never heard of the guy.
Probably have to watch another video on that and then recommend one to watch next week. But
I thought you made the name up, honestly.
Yeah, man, it feels like that. One thing I did learn from this is that Trabzonspor have some really nice shirts. It's like a, I don't know, is it like a claret and blue kind of stuff? Kind of like West Ham, but with stripes.
Sounds terrible.
Yeah, but West Ham shirts for next season are unreal. Really nice. They're like a throwback to 1980s. I'd recommend having a look if you haven't seen them already. Anyway, in the Turkish Super League, he got 5 goals and 8 assists this season in 29 matches. So not Joao Felix.
What position does he play?
Attacking midfield.
Yeah, it's, I mean, not bad.
Well, actually, first, just but... says midfielder.
Okay.
He's only 19, so
yeah. Oh, he plays
for a cheap
midfield.
Price. Yeah.
He actually plays central midfield, so he wouldn't be signed as a backup to Paqueta, I wouldn't imagine. I think he'd be signed as one who can play either side of the of the deep lying player. So that's,
I'm not against any young player whose hype, so long as it's not for a starting position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The thing is, it's ironic that our Primavera's been relegated, and now all of a sudden we're turning to young players. It's almost as if we're trying to correct something. I mean, if we're signing a load of 19-year-old players, and we have been poaching some teenage players from abroad, it's to sort of strengthen the youth team initially, and then the ones that are good enough will make their way up. But yeah, they're going to be playing in literally the second division at youth level because of our relegation, which is a bit shit. So yeah, that's Omer. We'll see what happens with him. Like I say, he's been linked with the Premier League, and when this sort of credible interest from Premier League teams, you know that there's something there. And then the final player that Chris mentions here is Malcolm from Barcelona. Kind of out of the blue again today, reports came out saying that Leonardo was looking at the idea of a move for Malcolm this summer, because obviously he's not been used that much by Barcelona, and that's one of the targets that Maldini still had in mind, despite Leonardo leaving, was Malcolm. I would really like this, but what part of me is thinking, what's the point if we're not going to play with any wingers?
Mm-hmm. Play
as a right mid.
There wouldn't be a right mid, though.
A 4-3-1-2? I guess there'd be three middle. Yeah, you're right.
He'd have to play either in behind, which again, you'd sort of crowbarring him into a position that he could do it though. I think he could probably do it because he's quite short. I think he's like 5'8". He's agile on the ball. He's quick. I think he could possibly play as a trequartista. I don't think he could play in a midfield three. He might be able to play as a shadow striker or something like that. That's maybe an option. I just can't see us being able to afford him, to be honest. And there's arguably other priorities where money like that should go. And then he asks another question. Again, referring to a report early in the week saying that Donnarumma's available for €60 million. He suggests here that the price tag should be at least €80 million and that Plisari is a possible successor. AJ, what kind of price tag would you put on him, if any at all?
Oh, sorry, I was yawning again there.
What happened to you being wide awake?
Yeah, dude, isn't it like 3 o'clock?
It's almost 4, but I had a late night and an early morning today, so I'm...
Yeah, you have puppy troubles, aren't you?
But back to the question. As far as who are we talking about? What was the name? Donnarumma. Okay. Yeah. I think 80 million is actually pretty good. 60 is a little low. Just looking at how much, you know, Kepa went for, the guy that just won the Champions, Allison. I don't know. There's just some keepers that I think Donnarumma is better than or has a higher cap than that are going for quite a bit. So I could see Donnarumma going for like the 80-90 area, but I could also see us accepting a 60 because we're dumb. Yeah, I don't know. I wouldn't want him to go for 60, but also I think that if he does go for 60, you could replace him with a top-level keeper for like 45. So I don't know. I'd be okay.
In today's transfer market, you can absolutely not do that.
I think you could. I think a keeper is so replaceable, you could definitely get a cheaper one that's still pretty solid.
I feel like there's not a lot of goalies on the market right now that I just feel like throughout, like, every few years, there's, like, positions that there's an abundance of and there's positions that there's not. And I feel like right now all the good keepers are set in their clubs and they're not going anywhere. So you have to really pay to
get them away. I think, again, you'd have to buy wisely if you're going to do that.
Yeah.
Right.
I like that Dragowski at Empoli. Yes. He's the one who broke loads of records for saves. And I like Albin Lafont at Fiorentina as well. Just a couple of names. But you're right. The big names are probably not attainable.
I think he's fairly underrated.
Too old though. Like, we've already got an old. Oh, he's not Spanish, is he?
No,
let's go back to
Big picture in the World Cup. Not this last one, the one prior.
We can't have two like 35 plus year old keepers on.
No,
him, but...
he's 35.
Oh yeah,
he's
32. Okay, still,
that's too old. What about
Do you bring someone in for 2 years who you know is going to be quality and let Plissari develop and sort of put all your faith in him?
I think that would, not all your faith, but I think that's a wise move. You know, develop him under someone extremely experienced, have Reyna as the backup, Plissari as the third, and hypothetically in this situation, Keylor Navas as the starter. That's a solid development path for him. Two high-level goalkeepers that have been, that have won multiple Champions Leagues, I believe. And then Keylor would leave in like 3 years. By then, Reyna would be coaching staff at Liverpool, most likely. And yeah, then Plissari could come in, or we could get someone else who's on the market at that point, you know?
I don't think anything less than $100 million for Donnarumma. I don't think we should sell him. When I woke up this morning and saw that news, I texted Oliver and was just like, $60 million for Donnarumma? And I was like, I'll kill someone if he leaves. Like, that's just bullshit. Don't sell one of your prized players. Get rid of Suso.
Yeah, but I think there needs to be an element of realism about this in that, this is like detaching business and sort of sporting decisions. The players that are going to be in demand, or most in demand, are the players that we least want to lose. You know,
right, but if you want to create a team around young players, don't sell your young players. It's common sense.
I agree with that. And I don't think we will sell him, but there will become a point where Donnarumma's own personal ambitions will become a factor because his agent is Mino Raiola.
Yes, but
he will want to play Champions League by the start of 2020-21 season. You know what I mean? So if he then pushes for an exit, we're left with no choice. In reality, we could get best value for him this summer.
I think next season he's safe. If we don't get Champions League that year, then he'll be flirting with leaving. But he's got AC Milan in his heart, and there's just something about players who come up in our youth system, and we sell them, and then later they come out and say, I never wanted to leave.
Yeah.
So I feel like it could be one of those situations. I don't know, man. I would love to never see him leave, but again, that's a fan's perspective and not a business or sporting perspective, so we'll see.
No, I totally agree with you. From a fan's perspective and from a strategic point of view, if you're going hard on the young core, you don't sell one of the key pieces of it. The same goes with Romagnoli. And obviously the same goes with someone like Cotrone, I don't know, even arguably applies to Kessier, Piontek, players like that. Calabria, obviously, as well. You don't sell off pieces like that because you have to replace them and they're more expensive.
There's been rumors that Gazidis is going to try and get a European ban. And so we're going to invest heavily this summer and really go for Champions League next year. And I don't know how accurate that is with Giampaolo coming in. Do you trust him with such a big transfer market?
I think if you go, if you're going to do it, if you know, if you're going to trust him, then you might as well not go all in. Don't like blow hundreds of millions, but you've got to back his philosophy. You've got to say, we like the way that you play football. Go and buy the players that you think will help you do it better. I would say back him to that extent. But perhaps if the budget was like 150 million again, I'd be a little bit apprehensive about the kind of names that he would go for. But we don't know. Obviously, it's a hypothetical at this point, really.
Right.
We don't know. I imagine that part of the reason that he's been considered is because of his ability to work with what he's got and get the best out of that. So we'll see, I guess. We'll see. There's a lot of uncertainty, but I think that this, it's funny how obviously from the last episode to now, things feel like they've fallen apart. Obviously a lot of pieces have gone. There's a lot of uncertainty, but I feel like in our next episode in a week's time, things will be in place. More things will be in place. We'll have a clearer idea of where the club's aiming for going forward. But just again, it's weird, this feeling every summer of being back at year zero, having hit the reset button. But yeah, we'll move on to the next question. Giovanni Scaramuzzino, I think I might have nailed that actually, says, is there any chance of us getting Sergei Milinkovic-Savic? Because I'm still hoping. So there was a report that came out from Il Messaggero today. Obviously, we record this on Mondays. saying that there is a gentleman's agreement in place between Claudio Lotito, who's the Lazio president, and Paolo Scaroni, who's our president, that if we didn't go for Simone Inzaghi as manager, and it's funny, all the links to Inzaghi seem to have stopped. If we didn't go for Inzaghi as manager, we would get first refusal on Milinkovic-Savic, someone who would be absolutely perfect in that 4-3-1-2, playing as one of the, probably the right centre mid. I mean, they're pretty good on the run. Yeah, bin him off, man. Or you can play him on the left side if you want. I don't know what his weak foot's like, actually, but...
if it's weaker than his right foot, oof.
Yeah.
Well, no, actually, if it's weaker, it might actually hit the goal.
Ooh, that's a good point. I was actually on about Milinkovic-Savic, to be fair. He could play on the left side, but again, we're talking... Or maybe he could play as the deep-line playmaker, but he doesn't strike me as physical enough for that. Could be wrong. And what was it? Yeah, Il Messaggero are usually pretty good on the Rome-based clubs, but they don't tend to go big on many transfer stories. This was quite a big one, and it got a lot of reaction on social media when we tweeted the article. People refuse to believe it as a possibility, but I do think it's pretty convenient how Inzaghi seems to have been completely dropped now. As a name in the running to be our next manager. AJ, have we got any chance of signing SMS this summer?
Yeah. Honestly, I do. I think it's real. It makes sense. I mean, we were pretty heavily linked to Inzaghi, and he was refusing an extension. And then all of a sudden this comes out, and then now he's got he signs a new contract. We've been linked with Milinkovic for 2-3 windows now. I mean, I don't know. It makes sense. I know that was a big target of Leonardo and Maldini's. I'm sure it still is. The big target of everyone's, Juve wants him. I could see it coming true. I think it happened. I think if we switch to this 4-3-1-2, we sell Suso. I think we invest heavily in Sergei. I could see it happening.
Mario, what do you reckon? Have we got any chance, or will he cost too much? Or
I think he'll cost too much, and where we're going to be investing elsewhere. But you never know. This club is always surprising us with what they're going to do next.
One thing that I will say about it is, as AJ alluded to, there have been pretty constant links between us and Milinkovic-Savic, which suggests that there is something there, because it's come from a variety of different sources. and it's happened now for three windows at least. There were very strong rumours both last summer and in January that a deal had sort of been agreed in principle. Even some saying that personal terms were agreed and all that kind of stuff. The one thing that we can't offer, which I think may be a deal breaker in this, is Champions League football. And it's amazing, you know, you sort of dust yourself down after that final day heartbreak of not getting into the top four. And then you get over it, and then you realise actually logistically how difficult it is to attract really good players, not being able to offer Champions League football.
We offer the same thing that Lazio offer, you know?
But therefore, is it maybe not a step up?
I mean, it might not be a step up, but it's a lateral, and it sounds like he's wanted the move, or at least we've pushed forward so many times.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to believe it. I really, really like him. I think he could fit in into the system very well. Again, this is all I'm assuming, it's Gianpaolo. But I see him ending up at Juve, to be fair. Unless they get Pogba, they won't need him.
It all depends on what he wants to do. Like, if he wants to help build Milan back into the Champions League, because I think us going to the Champions League is more realistic than Lazio, or if he just wants to go to Juve and be in the Champions League.
Mm-hmm.
So it all depends on his ambitions, and no one really knows his ambitions.
Think of it this way, though. I mean, he'll say yes to any offer that's given to him if the wage is right. That's common. Not many players turn down moves simply because of the club's accepted and they view themselves as expendable. So they make the move. They're like, at least they want me. But as far as going to Juve, you know, we saw Di Marzio link to Juve. That was a big one. But then all the stuff about our agreement comes out and the Inzaghi renewal. And then today we see Di Marzio linking Juve to Pogba.
Right.
Falling into place, yeah.
Yeah, is this just a bunch of coincidences? Or, I mean,
it
not
would
to be
massive.
Conspiracy, but, you know, connect the dots. Let's see what this is going.
I did the same, yeah.
Plus, Lotito's fucking crazy. And, you know, he probably wanted, like, $200 million, and everyone said no. Now, if we had this agreement, I bet it's, like, 60.
It'll be 40 plus Bilia. They'll take him back.
If they did 40 plus Suso, I'd be thrilled. That'd be great.
I was just thinking about players that we could genuinely offer in an exchange. I could see Kessie going the other way, you know. If Milinkovic-Savic wants out and wants into a bigger project, and Kessie, you know, hasn't had the most stable season at the club. He's had a lot of criticism.
And we actually pay for Kessie's loan now this season, too.
Crap, yeah.
But it was on the books for two seasons ago.
Yeah. I mean, it's already on the books. Like, I know that's been...
I've literally forgotten what I was going to say.
Quick flip on Kessie would be nice if we could, you know, once he's an official player and then, like, a week later just announce that we sold him for 35, just make a quick, tiny profit, you know?
That'd be pretty cool. That'd be cool. It's weird, isn't it? Because, again, another player who in that last game of the season arguably sort of put himself right in the shop window or reminded people what Kessie can be like when his shots find the top corner of the net and not the top corner of the Northern Hemisphere. There's no corners in a hemisphere. So that's a bad analogy. That's pretty much it, to be fair, lads. We've gone through the questions and all that. Maria, I'm going to throw it over to you. We've got a special guest on next week, haven't we? We might as well throw that out there.
Yeah, so we have Charlie Stilitano hopefully coming on next week. It's all set, but he's an important guy. He's the executive chairman of Relevant Sports, who is the competition who puts on the ICC, which is the International Champions Cup. They do the summer competition all over the world. He's also a huge Milan fan. He knows Paolo Maldini and Gattuso and Leonardo. So hopefully we can pick his brain a little bit about and get his opinion on what's going to happen this summer and talk about the ICC a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely buzzing to have him on. Just to hear about sort of logistically how they managed to put competitions like that together when you've got teams flying all over the globe and that. And obviously, right. Him being a Milan fan helps because, like you said, we can pick his brains on what has been a pretty turbulent time at the club. Yeah, just before we sign off, I'll plug once again the app that we have. It's available on the App Store and the Google Play Store. We are looking to do some upgrades on the app this summer. One of which is a sort of live API, which will improve the match center and that kind of stuff. But we're also looking for suggestions on that. So if you have any suggestions about features that you'd like to see in the app, then do let us know, on any form of social media. And we'll take that into consideration because, like I say, it's one of the things that we're really looking to upgrade this summer. And I think that's everything. I don't actually have a timer today, so I have no idea how long we've been going.
An hour and 5 minutes.
That's pretty good. That's our usual length. That's pretty good. And next week we might have a manager to announce. But for the time being, I've been your host, Oliver Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher. I've been joined as per usual by trusty sidekick Anthony Torgrud.
Trusty sidekick.
You threw it at Maddie last week. Sorry, yeah. To throw it back at you.
Yeah, I mean, that's a dig in the heart. I'm here. I'm the sidekick, and you can follow me on Twitter at Torgrud45. And we also had our popper with us today, Madison.
Our what?
I don't know.
Popper?
P-A-U-P-E-R. I don't know.
Popper.
Popper.
Jester.
Yeah.
Joker.
Yeah,
Garden gnome.
Joker. Garden gnome.
Garden gnome.
Yeah.
Funny. Funny guy, that. Yeah, it was a good episode. I'm kind of excited to see how this summer turns out. You guys can go ahead and follow me on Twitter at Madison_DT.
Yes, thank you very much for listening, everyone, and we will catch you in a week's time.
Patrick, mettila in mezzo, Patrick. Palla nostra, Suso, tira Alessio, Suso, tira. Perché non tiriamo? Ma perché non tiriamo? Gol! Alessio Romagnoli, gol! Alessio Romagnoli! Alessio! Il gol del capitano ancora! Ancora l'ultimo, come Gilardino, detto ieri in conferenza.